You're listening to the OneofUs.net podcast network. OneofUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneofUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
We are with Ben and Bradley. This is Marco, and we are reviewing a not exactly new, it's been out for a couple of years, playing some festivals and some conventions, but now making its Netflix debut is Power of Grayskull, the definitive history of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, also known as Marco's childhood. Because I saw a lot of toys in here that I know I owned all these damn things. I don't know how my parents paid for it, but somehow they acquired these things for me because I probably just whined a lot.
I think that's all of childhood really is.
That's all of childhood. But that actually is a pivotal aspect of this rather loving documentary made about this not always well-remembered franchise, but certainly a significant one in the 1980s. And our story proper begins in 1981. And like all stories set in the 1980s, it involves Ronald Reagan. So somewhere around 1981, Ronald Reagan appointed a brand new FCC chairman, the FCC being the Federal Communications Commission. And for years, they had imposed very strict regulations on what children's programming could do in regards to advertising. Well, the free market didn't like that very much. Advertising agencies and the makers of all kinds of crap like toys, candy bars, sugary breakfast cereals, etc. They wanted a piece of that Saturday morning after school action, and they were really hampered by that. But now with Ronald Reagan in charge, he put a new man in charge of the FCC, a man who shared Reagan's own pro-business, small government agenda.
So for trickle-down children's television?
Yeah. Exactly. And the thing is, the free market knew better than government what children could or could not watch. And the reason the regulations have been put in place is because children are dumb. I mean, they will buy anything you tell them to buy.
Well, that's and true. And I know this for this a fact. Whole story because, is Mattel going, yeah. Oh, we need a toy. I mean, we're losing money because we're being stupid idiots. And then they said, yeah, let's make Conan toys. And they said, oh, wait, that's a movie for adults. We can't do that shit. Let's make our own Conan, who's kid-friendly, correct, but still has a sword.
So, you know, and like I said, I was one of those dumb kids, so I would have whined, and it was determined that children could not really tell. They couldn't make a distinction between commercials and children's programming. To them, it was all kind of the same thing, and they're very impressionable. But with Reagan and his buddies in charge, things began to change, and it kind of kicked off this golden age of 30-minute commercials masquerading as children's programming. Now, that's the dark, kind of seamier side of what's otherwise a very warm and loving look back at this not quite forgotten franchise, but, you know, it really was only around for a few years. I mean, He-Man in its heyday was maybe, what, like 83 to 87, 88? It was a very short shelf life.
That's kind of what this documentary, Power of Grayskull, the definitive history of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which is a mouthful to say the goddamn least, is about, because they highlight a lot. Mattel knew fucking nothing about what they were doing with this. They kept going like, yeah, do this. And then they said, let's coast on that. And they said, okay, let's try this. Hey, it worked. Let's coast on that. And every time they coasted on it, shit just got worse and worse for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's because they did everything ass backwards. I mean, you can criticize things like Star Wars, for example, for like all of the marketing it unleashed on the world. But they really did this ass backwards. And again, Star Wars comes into play because Mattel had famously passed on the Star Wars license because they're like, you know, we don't have time to do it. And, you know, nobody buys toys, licensed toys after the movie comes out. That ends really quickly. But suddenly they realize they missed out on Star Wars, and a huge piece of market share for like boys' toys was going to Star Wars. So they needed like a Star Wars rival. And they're like, well, kids like fantasy. They like sci-fi. Instead of building a show and then making toys, they started with the toys first and then cobbled together a really kind of weak mythology that doesn't really make a lot of fucking sense. I mean, it's kind of cynical, yet everybody talking about this, from the original concept artist to the guys who did the animation, you know, they all seem to have fond memories of it. They seem to be coming from a good place, but make no mistake, this was a corporate decision to kids.
Some of them, at least, like I forget who they said the main guy was, but basically he had drawn the art and somebody said, huh, that's interesting, let's bring it to a pitch meeting, because it was just something he was doing in his free time. And I like to imagine a handful of these guys at the beginning were just like, now this was just something fun we were doing, and it turns out leadership loved it. But I gotta admit, like, as much as He-Man has a soft spot in my heart, it also means very little to me at the same time. Like, it's nostalgia to me, but it was before my time. It was kind of dead in the 90s for a period. I don't know about Bradley. How about you? How was He-Man in your life seen?
Show me on this action figure where He-Man touched you, Bradley.
Well,
in your heart.
I enjoyed He-Man. You know, I had the action figures as well. Who didn't have a Prince Adam and Cringer, at least? And I was actually kind of surprised to find out that a lot of the stuff I loved was just toy commercials. I remember when someone was explaining to me like years ago, and I thought, what? Transformers 2? And, you know, that, of course, got a huge laugh. Of course, Transformers 2, numbskull. Well, I was shocked and appalled during this documentary when they revealed that a lot of these different men were just differently color-coded, like Stinkman and who was the other guy? Stinkman was just a different color-coded Merman. Like, just, no.
See, and there's a couple of things in my childhood where I can look back and go, oh, that's where my cynicism began. it wasn't like a one thing. It was just like a little accumulation. Like, the first one that I remember was probably the day I realized, holy shit, Moon Knight is just a ripoff of Batman.
I'm so torn.
It's a billionaire in a mansion with a butler who fights crime by night.
Can I just say, I'm kind of troubled trying to picture young, uncynical Marco. It's very hard for me.
There was a time. It was a moment. It was a beautiful moment, but not meant to last. But one of those other cynical moments was when I realized, I was looking at Skeletor and I was looking at He-Man, and I realized they have the same body. The only thing different is the head and the little armor that would clip on, and like the accessories. And then I started looking, all the other characters, Man-at-Arms was the same thing. He's basically He-Man with a helmet, same body, and then you just strapped on the little armor and there was a different paint job. What you find out listening to some of these product designers and toy makers is that at some point, to everybody's surprise, this really took off. I mean, it took off better than they ever could have expected. And like, anytime you have this demand that you can't meet, they just started cranking out product, even when they were to the point of like going to obsolete toy lines and just pulling things they already had molds to, like the Tiger, which famously the Tiger that he rides on, Battle Cat, aka Cringer, it was a full-size Tiger model from another action series on a different scale. And when the machinist came back saying, look, we ran the mold and the Tiger's enormous, it doesn't make any sense. You know, they're not going to work together. And one of the designers like, you know what? Slap a saddle on that cat and He-Man will ride it.
No, it was painted that green was and yellow, but it sounded like, this is never going to work. They did it despite him. And he comes back and goes, that's actually pretty fucking good. Way to go, guys. Yeah. It's like,
I thought it was cool too.
It was so cynical. I mean, it's just recycling crap. But, you know, it's like, what, we need something out by next month. We need some new product. Like, what do we got laying around? I mean, it's kind of incredible that they got away with this. And at some point it became so popular, they reached the next logical conclusion, which is, we should have a TV show and to sell these things. And not only are the shows themselves an advertisement for the toys, you can run actual advertisements for the toys during the show.
So I will say, I found that really interesting, because when it got to the show and they were talking about, they started off pitching it by, how do we tell lore for people to care about these characters from mini comic books? When it got to the show, they already had basically a show Bible put together because of the comics and because they were working with DC Comics. And it's like, yeah, the show was kind of a natural progression because we already had lore that basically some of the great writers at DC were like, well, fuck it. If I'm going to make a comic about this, I'm going to go deep on this shit. And they just fleshed it out to the point where a show kind of works.
I remember those little comics because you would get them. I remember getting them with the Castle Grayskull set and other things. And they were cool, but I never really thought too much about them until they interviewed some of the comic artists or writers. And they were like, yeah, and I've realized later on that, like, we were all writing these things independently because we were working so fast that, you know, there's no real consistency in the lore. And the lore itself isn't all that great. I mean, you basically have everybody wanting to be the masters of the universe, which involves going, getting a sword, two halves of a sword, which will then unlock Castle Grayskull.
I honestly knew none separately. Of that shit.
And, no, me neither. You know, and the thing is, Castle Grayskull really looks like it should be Skeletor's place, but apparently everybody wants it. And
oh, yeah. Castle Grayskull.
There's Prince Adam, who's actually He-Man. And Prince Adam He-Man is the worst fucking disguise in the world since Clark Kent. I mean, he is an enormous bodybuilder dude with a blonde bob and a pink shirt. That's it. The only difference between him and He-Man is the armor.
He just gets slightly bigger when he's He-Man. Yeah.
When he raises his sword up, he grows. Oh, wait.
And then they realize that actually we'll have a spinoff series for He-Man's long-lost sister, apparently, called She-Ra. And it's another thing that's so confusing. It's like they live on this planet called Etheria. They claim to be, you know, all vying for the role of masters of the universe. Motherfucker, your universe is an Eternia. That's it. Mm-hmm. Your universe is a single planet. This is like Krull, which is just as dumb, which is just a fantasy that was created to like rival Star Wars, but no one put any thought into it. It's like these people are vying to be rulers of the universe, but they fight with swords and rule on horses. Get a goddamn space program, then you can aspire to ruling the universe. Until then, shut up.
You know? Michael, I'm glad we could tune you, you know, bring you in here so you can come to terms with your childhood in such a violent and angry way. It's kind of all I ask for in my life, really, is Marco coming to terms with things he's done as a child.
Oh, it's so frustrating how much money I could wasted on that shit. But I loved it at the time. And, you know, Stinkor, he never stank. I don't care. He had a little some kind of scratch and sniff coating that would make him smell skunky, like any kid would actually want that.
Yeah.
Never really stank. He smelled like plastic. That was it.
That's the funny thing.
But yeah, we loved it.
To me, started because like I knew semi of it, but it really came to me as that meme in like the late 90s, early 2000s of the earlier ones of him singing "What's Going On" by Four Non-Blondes.
Right.
And it's like, you know what? That actually connected me to He-Man. It's like, this is stupid, but the cartoon actually looked kind of interesting. And as you dig into it, as you're saying, it is a really fucking stupid idea. But then, you know, I had from my older brother, I had the like 80s G.I. Joe toys. I had the real Ghostbusters toys, which are all meant to market to you as well. I remember in the early 2000s that when they were toying with cheap CGI for kids shows, the start, they made a Stretch Armstrong TV show, which I'm like, that was dated as fuck by then. I knew Stretch Armstrong from bad, like seeing it on the store shelf and going, what is that? And my mom going, oh, that's an old toy. I don't know why it's still here. So I guess I'm the
odd one. When they try to remake Stretch Armstrong as Manglore, that was awful. It's basically a He-Man that you could stretch, but like apparently the Manglores, you could like rip their arms and limbs off and but then stick them back on. That never worked. Once you tore them apart, they were, imagine a broken Stretch Armstrong, and that was Manglore. Don't get me started on Mask. Mask was another thing.
Mask.
Another toy line. Yeah. Do you remember Mask?
No, I remember Holy Mask. Shit. Yeah.
No one else remembers Mask. I don't remember what it was about. It was just about a group of people who had like fancy cars
with big masks.
And you know, that transformed to other things.
Well, they're more like helmets, right? And they had a gas station place.
And they misspelled mask. Like, wasn't it like M-A-S-Q or M-A-S-C?
They were supposed to be some like super secret agency with like, but they had like cool fucking cars or something. But yeah, this is why these regulations were put into place. Because they realized that children would buy anything. You know, it's like, you can buy Mr. T cereal because it's got his face on it. You know, you could go buy, you know, Ghostbusters. Another cynical moment. 1983, Return of the Jedi had come out. We were at a gas station and there was a little box of cookies, chocolate cookies. And on the cover was, you know, on the box was Luke Skywalker holding his green lightsaber, and there were all of the little cookies were made in like Return of the Jedi shapes. It was like a 3PO head.
I feel like we're getting far away from the actual movie here. So
the thing is, I ate it. They were terrible, and I felt so disappointed in myself. So, well, children, this movie is kind of insidious because they're putting a really sweet face on there the fact that this was garbage. That was what my point is. And so as a cynic, you're like, why are we making kids buy toys? Give them good entertainment. Well, but you know what? These people loved what they did. They're proud of what they did. And you do get some of that fun in the documentary.
That's the point.
I don't want to shit on it entirely.
I was going to say, so this movie, let's see, it's a documentary made by two guys, Randall Lobb and Robert McCallum. Randall Lobb doesn't have a lot of other directing credits, but he also directed The Turtle Power, The Definitive History of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So evidently he's really creative with names.
I was going to say, so he's an auteur.
Oh, yeah. He's done this a few times. And then Robert McCallum has directed a few more. He's done Jim Henson, Sticks, String, and Felt. Mommy, Mommy, There's a Monster on the Stairs. Nintendo Quest Power Tour. So they're guys who are very much about, let's document our childhood because we need to address this bullshit too. They're pretty much Marco with less anger.
A lot less.
But yeah, this documentary, as Marco said, it's like the guys who created it, like they fully own up to, no, this was purely for marketing and it was purely bullshit. But then like, as it gets along, I really did love that they get to the point where they're like, no, Mattel didn't know what they were doing. They kept fucking us over and saying, no, we're not going to let you do that or do this, when they actually had creative ideas to keep things fun and actually, you know, keep making He-Man interesting. And they kind of like romance, like, you know, this is a thing that shouldn't have worked. We made it work. And you guys keep letting it die, including, and especially, and I'm sure I'll get some more Marco vitriol from this one, the He-Man live-action movie starring Dolph Lundgren Frank Langella, which I still have not watched that all the way through. I know a master of schlock for it, but my favorite thing in this documentary is when they talk about it, though, because Frank Langella is like, even to this day, is like, I was really excited to do this, actually. It sounded like fun. I was working out, and I was like, I get to do sword fights. And then he's like, yeah, they didn't let me do that. They said you can't show skin because you're a skeleton man. It's like, that's the best description of
a complaint. Yeah, he was really disappointed because he got all pumped up for it. And the thing is, to his credit, Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella are here. Dolph Lundgren, this was, of course, his big sort of, he'd been in movies before, most notably Rocky IV, but this was his big action hero lead role. And it was Langella was, you know, already a well-respected character actor. He's the kind of guy you would never imagine being in this movie, but he took it really seriously. He committed to it, and I have been inspired by that Skeletor design multiple times in my brief career doing design and film. It just holds up. It is a great design. That makeup holds up, and Frank Langella's performance is indelible. The rest of the movie around him, though, is pretty awful. But you could see when they interview, and these are some well-noted guys like William Stout, the production designer, and Richard Edlin, who's like an Oscar-winning effects guy.
They got a creative team and a cast that, all for all intents and purposes, should have worked. Like, even with Dolph Lundgren not being as great at speaking English, he's a very well-cast appearance actor for playing Adam and He-Man. The problem with this movie, and it's funny because I had just watched last week before I watched this, the Honest Trailers guys had done one for He-Man. Of the biggest thing with this movie is they're like, okay, it needs to take place on Earth so people can understand it. And then they made 50% of the movie focused on human teenager characters instead of the actual Masters of the Universe fighting each other, which honestly, if that was all that it was, even with the schlock and the terrible budget from the Golan brothers from Canon Films, this could have actually still worked if they actually gave them the focus, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And they famously started just pulling money out of the production the closer they got to the end, to where it really does kind of end on a whimper. And that was kind of the beginning of the end of the franchise, at least for me. I think that was the progression. You have a toy, you have a TV show, now you have a live action movie, which I saw in a drive-in.
Nice.
Holy crap, I remember that. It was a great drive-in movie. And so I didn't hate it at the time, but watching it again on cable when I was a kid, I started to really pick it apart. And after that, they really lost a lot of steam. I think they did not, even though the mythos, the lore of Masters of the Universe isn't particularly deep or well thought out, they didn't successfully translate it to the film. So the film didn't really open up any opportunities for sequels or expand, you know, its presence in the marketplace. It was kind of like their last hurrah, and then they cheaped themselves out before they could, you know, it could have gone out with a bang. And I do know, as they go into the details in the documentary, that there were attempts to bring back Masters of the Universe. Now, they just think some were done in a slightly more anime style. You have new generations of fans or, you know, who are now adults. And they're like, well, I love Masters of the Universe. Why wouldn't I, you know, if I'm a custom toy maker, why wouldn't I make new versions of the old toys? Now, Kevin Smith apparently is bringing back Masters of the Universe because that's what he does.
Yeah, it's kind of a beautiful thing. People, you know, getting to pay homage to things they loved in the past. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Brad, did you catch any of the new ones? Because I have not seen any of the new He-Man stuff.
Like
that
with
came
Marco,
out.
after the film, I had no idea there was any He-Man stuff going on. I had no idea he went to space. I had no idea there was a beefier but not quite as steroid abuse remake in the, was it 2000s? That shocked
me. Something like that. I was
surprised.
With
great voice casting, too, so. Not that,
but
the
that
older
also
ones
got canceled been. Pretty quickly, did
yeah,
it?
Yeah, here maybe
I
one season
so.
And it was out, and no idea.
Because it just because here's the secret to Masters of the Universe and its current status, whatever, as a little cult thing. I am convinced that the only people who love it are the people who grew up with it. Just like Star Wars keeps trying to make movies for people who were kids 40 years ago, the same thing is happening. And if they don't find a way to make this appeal to the new generation, I don't see how it lasts longer than a season or two just as a vanity project.
Well,
no. So you're saying they need to update Orko to something cute, adorable, and endearing like they did with R2-D2 and BB-8.
I think Orko should have a substance abuse problem. And I think, you know, he's been messing with the dark arts and, you know, he just has a whole season arc where they just kind of try to bring him back to the light side.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Robot
maybe
Chicken
that's the way
like
to go.
That. They did a bit where basically like Adam actually gets killed. They're all at Skeletor's like freaking out like, oh, God, we actually killed him. I didn't think that would actually kill him. I just threw a rock at him Chicken, and he died. Yeah. And Orko takes the sword. He actually goes out and it turns into He-Man Orko and kills Skeletor and all the bad guys. And basically, I forget who it was. Somebody shuts up and goes, oh, Orko, you found the sword. Good. We can actually revive Adam with that. He goes, oh, so I go back to the regular Orko? She's like, yeah. He goes, just stabs her. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. This is me now. that's the He-Man we need. But
just the placeholder names just tell you exactly the kind of level of creativity that was involved here. It was really just inventing lore as you go along, and it really doesn't hold up that well from what I can see. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Kevin Smith version is like the Robot Chicken version of this. I don't know. It could just all be a goof. It could all be a parody. I haven't seen it, so I couldn't tell you. But there's nothing really compelling or original about the storyline.
That's true.
You know, and that's a shame to realize that something you love so much as a child really wasn't all that.
Well, yeah, I had to come to terms with the fact that I was playing with these dolls because I wish I was a big buff man with a cool skeleton face. And what the hell is that? What does that say about me? Because the lore here is literally, I'm going to say it a third time. No, backing off. But hi, I'm He-Man. I have a sword. This sword means I'm awesome. Come play with me. Like, really? That's the lore? Well, if you have the sword, you unlock the secrets of Grayskull. Oh, what are those? I don't know, man. Just play with the damn toys.
I have the power.
You unlock the secrets. You unlock the Grayskull, and the power is you get all. It's really just like a pile of proof of purchase, which you just mail in and get a free exclusive action figure.
You get a lot of stickers. You get more stickers get on the inside of your castle. But with that,
that's right.
With that, Marco, why don't you roll into your final thoughts?
Okay. I know I've sounded a little harsh because that's just my way. Yeah.
Just remember, you're not reviewing He-Man. You're reviewing a documentary about He-Man.
But I'm reviewing a He-Man, a He-Man documentary with a very long, unwieldy name. But you know what? For people who were of that age, this is a trip down memory lane. I was amazed watching these action figures and remembering. I was like, oh, yeah, I did have that. I forgot about Looky from the She-Ra cartoon, which they touch on a little bit, because it was generally regarded that the She-Ra cartoons and characters were actually a little bit better than He-Man. It was what rare spinoff that kind of improved on the original.
Yeah,
she had a character arc.
Yeah, He-Man doesn't.
And that was a funny little thing. There was a little character, Kale Looky, at every episode. You had to find him. He was hidden somewhere in the background, like a little Where's Waldo. And then at the end of the episode, they'd show it to you. I was like, did you find me? Here I am, you know. That was fun. That was a way to engage children. That was actually like they were making them watch the screen for something other than product placement. But it's hard to criticize a show like this for product placement when the entire show itself is product placement. But what Lob and McCullum really bring into this is a genuine love and respect, not just so much for the franchise, but for the guys in the trenches who were actually doing this stuff, the people behind the scenes who weren't necessarily getting rich off this. They just were allowed to let their imaginations free and make some crap for Mattel to sell. And they had a good time doing it. And you'll have a good time watching this movie. But if you have never been familiar with this franchise, it may not do much for you. Nevertheless, it was still worth its time for those old farts like us. So I am going to give this 7 out of 10 inexplicably skull-faced fortresses.
All right. Well, Bradley, how about you?
I enjoyed it. I actually played a lot with these toys. And it wasn't so much the toys or the lore, but I played a lot with these toys with my older brother. And, you know, we would bond over that. And I'm sure the ridiculous adventures we came up were matching to the simple, ridiculous lore that these comic book writers had to come up with. I liked hearing about the FCC and how they would constantly be putting their foot down, like, no, the sword can't be too sharp, and he sure as hell isn't going to stab anyone, you crazy, crazy animators. I like that they complained. My favorite complaint was the FCC sent us a note saying, He-Man can't lift any trees over his head or throw them, because kids will emulate that. So that's pretty funny. I really liked the Dolph Lundgren, Franklin Jealous stuff. I watched the hell out of that VHS tape when me and my brother had it over and over and over again. That's actually how I saw the stinger for Samuel L. Jackson in Iron Man, because at the end of that movie, if you don't know, Skeletor pops his head up out of the pit of lava and goes, I'll be back. So ever since then, my 8-year-old mind with the Pavlov dog's response is like, I have to watch every credit scene now. And thanks to that, I was able to see the Avengers sneak peek or teaser that Samuel L. Jackson does at the end of Iron Man, because me and one other guy sat through all the credits and were like shocked when, you know, that happened. But so I, you know, just saying, I have a really soft spot in my heart for the ridiculously trash He-Man movie. I don't remember anything about it other than that sequence. I enjoyed how horrible it looks to be a toy maker and to design things. You know, it sounds like a fun job, but all these guys were constantly stressed, really pushing, you know, limits and trying to come up with new stuff, only to be told, you can't do that, redesign it. Well, let's just repaint it. You know, you got over that with the Cringer thing. That was pretty funny. So I actually had a lot of fun. I did feel a bit irked at how a lot of my childhood enjoyment, though, was just crap, and a crap commercial as well, like you were saying, Marco. So I'm going to give this 7 secrets of Grayskull out of 10 secrets of Grayskull.
You guys make me feel like I liked it better than you, because maybe I didn't have that connection where I felt cheated by what this movie showed. Because that's the thing is, like, I think this is a really well put together documentary. Like, to the credit of Lob and McCallum, there's a lot of love and character. They got a lot of guys where I'm just like, honestly, yeah. I'm surprised you got these people here. You know, getting Langella and Lundgren were great. I guess maybe because it was this premiered at a He-Man convention in 2017, the PowerCon, the He-Man and She-Ra toy and comic book experience, which if they named this movie to be as long as that, it makes sense because goddamn. But like they got them, they got basically every creator of He-Man still alive, including the children of some of the dead ones. Like they went really deep. They got, there's a guy literally credited here, John Atkin, who I vaguely remember from this, who's credited as He-Man historian. What a fucking time we live in that He-Man historian is a title you get in an IMDb credit. What a fucking world. Jesus Christ. He-Man, honestly, like we've all been sold things by cartoons. And this one wasn't one that I never had a He-Man toy. I don't think, maybe I had one that was in the bottom of my brother's toy box that even he didn't care about. But you know, there's a lot of nostalgia to it, and you know, I can say, like, looking at it, actually, it was a very different design from everything else out at the time, which really is to its credit. If you know, say what you will about it being something made just for marketing, campy as hell. It was a fun, campy idea, and it was a different campy idea, and it influenced a lot of great people. I don't know if we mentioned it earlier, but me and Margaret were discussing it before with Bradley, that J. Michael Straczynski was one of the writers on the cartoon or on the comic book for DC, and Straczynski is one of the best still working comic writers right now.
He started off in cartoons.
It influenced a hell of a lot of amazing things, and you know, put that together with, you know, how deep they got in this documentary and how they really kept the pace going and got a lot of great footage. If you guys are listening to the site, I guess we'll come out a week after this, but me and Bradley were just reviewing another one about a stunt guy. And it's like, how is that one boring? But this one about a stupid cartoon meant to sell things to people actually keeps you riveted and keeps you going. And it's because these guys actually kept the momentum going. It's far from perfect. It's a little overlong. It's a little overly saccharine and positive about, you know, He-Man and like selling it more than just, you know, as a description or a history of He-Man. And I think that's partially because I think it was probably made on commission for this film festival or for this convention to get started. And that's fine. It's still really enjoyable. So I'm going to give it at least a little bit better than you guys. 7.5 out of 10 stickers, because we can't afford to put any more inside the castle.
Oh man, and you had to put those on yourself too. I remember that. They weren't gonna just make it easy for you. It's like, here's a pack of stickers, kid, because we save 50 cents on each mold by not putting any detail there. It's cheaper to just print it out. You can put it on your own damn self. Here's a comic book. Buy some more shit.
We know you can't color between the lines, but try to put on a sticker on straight, motherfucker. Do it.
Oh, it was hard.
So was Skeletor's bones.
No, they weren't.
No, he was ripped. He just had the bone face.
That was the weird thing. Their heads squishy were rubber. They had hard plastic bodies. Hurt yourself. And squishy little plastic heads. Or rubber heads. They were like bouncing balls.